What's up, guys? Welcome to the Humans of MarTech podcast. His name is John Taylor. My name is Phil Gamache. Our mission is to future-proof the humans behind the tech so you can have a successful and happy career in marketing. What's up, everyone? Today, we have the pleasure of sitting down with Mauro Figueiredo, a global digital transformation and MarTech leader. Mauro spent the first 6 years of his career focusing on CRM and marketing automation for various gambling and casino companies across the UK as well as Malta. He worked as a CRM manager at Sony Computer Entertainment, focused on growing PlayStation game launches, including Uncharted 4, PlayStation VR, and several live events as well. He later had a short advisory stint as a business aviation company and a booking marketplace startup. He then joined Europe's largest gaming publisher, Gameforge, as their head of CRM, where he led multi-channel campaigns that spanned across 400 million plus users. He then made the mega move to JP Morgan Chase as executive director of CRM, where he built the CRM department from the ground up. And most recently, he's moved over to APAC, Vietnam, to be director of MarTech and center of excellence at a regional financial institution. Mauro, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. Hi, Phil. And hello, everyone listening today.
This episode is brought to you by our friends at NAC. Launching an email or landing page in your marketing automation platform shouldn't feel like assembling an airplane mid-flight with no instructions, but too often, that's exactly how it feels. NAC is like an instruction set for campaign creation, from establishing brand guardrails and streamlining your approval process to NAC's no-code drag-and-drop editor to help you build emails and landing pages. No more having to stop midway through your campaign to fix something simple. NAC lets you work with your entire team in real time and stops you having to fix things mid-flight. Check them out at NAC.com. That's K-N-A-K. And tell them we sent you.
Yeah, no, thanks, sir. Thanks for your time. I know it's late in Vietnam. It's early morning for us. So yeah, especially thankful for you making time for this.
Yeah.
I want to start by asking you about building winning MarTech teams. I know that you've had the opportunity to build a bunch of different teams at different sizes and different maturity stages for companies like enterprise teams like JP Morgan. I'd love for you to walk us through maybe like your framework for how do you structure this ideal MarTech team?
Yeah, so I have a framework. My approach tends to be different on the size of the company, on the team itself, the maturity of the team. But my approach tends to go into building a team in really focusing in understanding the scope of the project. Right? What is the scope of the project that we have? What are the technologies that we need actually to bring in to deliver that business value, business challenge? Once I have that clear idea, then it's thinking about who is best fitted for that MarTech team from a hard skill, in a sense of what are actually the skill sets that they need, from a someone very technological, really customer obsessed, technology obsessed, experience obsessed, so that you combine different right and left brain people, but most importantly, is the attitude or characteristics the person would have in a sense of when we go through a MarTech project, you have the discovery phase, RFP, and then you've got your defining, and then you also have your implementation, which sometimes can drag, and things change, right? So it's key to find people who have the personality to switch on to different types of mode. Now I'm defining things. After I have discovered it, now I need to implement it. Now something changed. So for my experiences is finding someone well rounded up that is willing to go through multiple changes, being resilient enough to be able to cope with any type of changes. Although the scope sometimes is fixed, as you know, a few things might change, the industry might change, a new tech might come in, and you might need to repurpose everything you've done. So having this type of mentality at times for a winning MarTech team, it's even more crucial sometimes than the skill set itself, right? Because changes can be quite frustrating in general, right, as human beings. So yeah, that's kind of my approach, is really looking at a scope, the project, what I need to do, and then looking at how skill sets, but then also looking at the soft skills and personalities that I need to build up that team.
So when you're building, just to build off that question and that answer, when you're building out these MarTech teams and thinking about like spotting the next future MarTech superstar, I know you've built several teams and you've had a lot of luck here. Give us some insight into the types of questions that you ask. I know a lot of our listeners are probably, you know, in their career thinking about, hey, what's going to happen when I go to interview for my next big position? What types of questions are people going to ask me? And what are they looking for out of those questions?
Yeah, so I can tell you about me, and I know different leaders have different aspects, right? So I focused a lot, of course, your CV, the experience, focus on your EQ, right? Your IQ, sorry, which is really your career, what you have done. So it's really about being able to demonstrate, not just through the CV, but through the interview process, the situation, the task, the results, and the actions you drove, right? So kind of like the star model situation, task, action, and results. So following that process, it's really key to be able to provide examples of how you contributed, how you collaborated with the team. But some of the questions I really like to ask, focusing on seeing that I've vetted all the professional skills, company history, I know the person is talking about what they should be talking about. Then I start focusing on emotional intelligence, right? And the two questions I actually enjoy asking, and I think it's sometimes it comes as a surprise to some, is I ask, how do you describe yourself? Provide me with four words or objectives on how you describe yourself. And then tell me how and why. And then people start thinking, they give me sometimes three, sometimes two. Maybe they're nervous, so they can't go in. And then I said, okay, fair enough, good. But this is like, it's just an open conversation. So now you describe yourself. This is how you describe yourself. One, two, three, and four. So now tell me, how do your friends describe yourself, right? And then again, they think about it. Sometimes it becomes easier when they're friends. So this allows me to see how the person perceives themselves and how they think the world perceives them. And then at times there's some correlations in that. And I really try to tune in, number one, into their personality, their motivations, and as well allows me the time to get to know them as well and have some follow-up questions. I'm sure other people have. I had other questions was, if there's a fire now, right? And you'll have to leave the building. What is the item? The only item you need to take, right? And put the person in the spot. So those are kind of the questions I kind of like to ask.
Those are fun questions. It's like refreshing from the what's your greatest strength or your biggest weaknesses. I think it's a different take on that. But it would also surprise me, like, how would you describe yourself, and then how would your friends describe you? It's a good interview question to keep in your back pocket, because, like, yeah, I'm not sure off the cuff, like, how I would answer that. And I don't know if, like, the off the cuff answer, reflecting on it, would be like, oh shit, like, I forgot to mention this and mention that. But yeah, I like the questions.
It's very personal.
One of the four words that I think a lot of people in marketing operations and MarTech would want to have, I guess, based on some of the interviews we've had in the past on this show, is the word curiosity. Like, I feel like this is such a common thread that comes up in all of our interviews, talking with marketing operations leaders, MarTech leaders, and so on.
Yeah.
What's your take on curiosity, and how do you demonstrate this in a hiring process? And how do you kind of, when you're hiring, how do you find out if people are curious before they take the job? Because as you mentioned, like, things are constantly changing. I think the curiosity, at least my opinion, is one of those traits that kind of can help you surf all of these changes as it's happening.
Yeah, I really enjoy that aspect of curiosity. I feel in our profession, it's definitely something that we need, right? We need to be curious about of what's coming next, what the customer wants, what the client wants, right? What our business internal wants. So the way I could translate this, it is the following way in terms of showing curiosity from an interview. One would be go above and beyond, if you can, finding out what's on the internet about the company. Try to find a connection, other connection, perhaps, that is linked to the company. Try to link to someone that from that company that doesn't mind maybe having a 15-minute chat because you're interested in interviewing or you're about interviewing about that. So you're curious. So you even try to find, I found this role at this company. The hiring manager is so and so on. Would you mind having a chat to understand about the team? So then when you come in and you are speaking with your interviewer, you already have a lot of information that the person is not even thinking about that you would have because that's not accessible clearly to everyone. That's true. This guy's curious. This guy really wants to get to know. He's inside. He's a few steps ahead, right? So this is one way of showing curiosity about the role, about the person, and what you want to do. So I think this type of forward-thinking, curiosity in the sense of going and investigating, it's really good, as well as asking questions, right? Asking questions that normally many people would not ask, right? And you only feel that once you're in the room. But it's really about, I say something, and then you follow up, you're really curious in finding out why, the logic behind it that shows the thought process. And this is really something that in our realm of what we do, it's really important to have the thought process to understand from A to B, and then you start branching out. So showing, asking these questions, so for me, that will show curiosity.
Yeah, love that answer. I think those are good tips on, like second level degree connection, even first, if that's even better, just like, I'm interviewing at this company, can I pick your brain about this? I also like to, during interviews, expand on this idea of curiosity for like the practice itself. Like, how are you keeping up with MarTech? What are the blogs, the newsletters, the podcasts that you're like subscribed to, that you're listening to? Like, how are you staying up to stuff? And I've gotten a lot of interview candidates that are just like, well, I don't really read books. I don't like podcasts, but I learn like on the job and blah, blah, blah. And then there's like some candidates that are just listing off like a ton of resources, and they have like two mentors that they proactively reached out to. So you can like easily separate the folks that are hungry and curious, right? So yeah, I love the advice there. I wanted to ask you about like the profession of when you're going into interview for some of these roles. I was chatting with a listener recently of the show who was currently on the hunt for a director of marketing operations role. One company he was interviewing with was looking at, I wouldn't like qualify this as a unicorn, but it's an interesting kind of mix of the two. So the role was like director of marketing operations, but they were looking for this director to own both MarTech and analytics. And in like big companies, those are usually like two separate roles, oftentimes like two separate departments. It'd be like a data team and then the MarTech team. The data team does like multi-touch attribution, like analysts, like all the analysis, like the dashboarding, the pipeline stuff. And the MarTech folks are building out integrations and change management and like teaching how to use the tool and all that stuff. But so for this company, they were hoping this director of MOPS person to be doing the two. And this wasn't a startup, because like typically in a startup, you know, this person's wearing both hats. This was like a 200 person plus company, and usually you would find those into two different teams. So I'm curious, what advice would you have for people who are looking to specialize in a sub area of marketing ops, like analytics or MarTech? And like, how do you feel about these like opposing forces of employers who are looking to consolidate all of these functions into a single person?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. And this is something I've seen currently becoming a big trend, right? Where employers are trying to amalgamate functions, right? We're moving into this space where the employers expect more with less. So this is exactly this example of putting two functions that normally would sit apart together, handling person, right? And I feel this has its own positives and negatives. For someone very senior, there is definitely a negative at times once you or let's say challenge, rather, because once you specialize in an area, you want to build on that strength, rather than spreading out, because that's where you need that value. Maybe you have a team that is specialized in that area on the other end specifically, right? And then for me, someone I'm starting out or in that middle for a jump and has been generalist, it's actually a good move, right? So it really depends first on that perspective. But my advice would be that most of us, or there's been a time where I started as a, I'm going to call it like an M shape, which means I have very verticals of expertise across multiple areas. But then the economy has changed. They say, now you have to be a T shape, right? We have a strong knowledge into one specific area and a broad range in one area. So we're coming back to this M shape expertise again. And what I would like to see in these types of, let's say, our missions of roles from the employers is that also the remuneration, right? The package offered to those going through it should be equal to that specific increase of scope, right? For the same person, which at times is not, but it would be nice that it is. So what I would actually then say for someone looking into specializing in those areas is first really understand the foundations and the basic principles of what they want to do. They should see professionals already doing it. Again, I'll focus on second degree, few degrees, like connections, who are doing those roles. And we understand some of the ones who are actually doing it, how are they doing it, and be part of those communities. And also, whilst in that process, if you said, okay, my skill is more into one on the analytics, content, be quite clear and then find out the expectations, right? And then we said, okay, normally those skills do come apart. This is the best that I could do. But then you can set up a plan or learning plan of learning about those other parts that you might not know. And then doing this, speaking with communities, getting certifications if needed, will help out. But I think there needs to be a growth mindset. And nowadays, I think that as marketers, we actually need to know and specialize in vertical areas, again, like before. But this is the nowadays challenge. And I think also we should push back at times with the employees that say the value you get from the person, focusing one thing that they really know and focus, it's much greater than spreading the person. Maybe the person in the beginning can do that, but then build up a team underneath support and maximize. That's my advice, a bit different thoughts, but that would be really the best recommendation I would give to someone new to study and I'm aware in the street.
It's actually a nice segue into the next question that I have for you around AI adoption. And we're seeing this notion of co-pilots for everything right now in marketing. So like this idea that you have specialists and generalists, like now you're starting to augment with AI. Like you can have a generalist who has now an AI specialist in web analytics or in CDPs or whatever. I'm curious around your take on this, like how is the adoption of AI going to change the makeup of marketing teams? How is it going to change the way that people skill themselves up in this new era? What is the role of AI co-pilots in marketing?
I think that's really the hard question, and it's a topic I'm really passionate about talking about, right? I feel AI and those co-pilots are definitely, they should be human partners, right? It's a co-collaboration, hence the name of the co-pilot, right? I think as humans, we should be in a driving seat and then utilize the machines to support us. What is my view on this? There are two things, right? We know that utilizing those tools is really beneficial and it's been at times really enhancing productivity for more than 40% in some industries. We know that this industry by 2030 is poised to bring about $15 trillion. And Gen AI on its own is supposed to bring about 4.4 trillion in specific use cases. And 75% of that value, the 4.4, it will come or will be realized from the marketing and sales functions and attributed, right? So there's a lot of things to do. So it's a key area. But what we really need to understand in marketing, there will be different and new ways of working. And I have this view of either we need to upskill and bring those skills into the current or traditional roles, or the traditional roles needs to change. For example, we could have, I like to imagine this, an AI strategist. So that would be a new role that you have this strategist looking at all the different types of AI, Gen AI activity within a company and understands the impacts to a customer, right? So it's kind of a global role throughout the company, understands the touch points and how it works. Then you could have an AI content generated person, which links the human and the machine and really understands the impacts of that and really looking on how to safeguard brands. So I have a view of either we'll have to upskill it, we don't have to, actually, we must, right? Because this technology is here, it's not going anywhere. And and I think many of us are utilizing it on a daily basis, and I think it will help with maximizing our mundane tasks, really, and we can focus on what's important, which is our human skills, that we can amplify it. So this is kind of my current view of either we bring it on into the new, those skill sets into the new roles, or create completely new roles. And it's depend exactly on how companies need to create themselves. So this is what I'm kind of trying to call like the new renaissance of a workplace, where before, like you would commission a painting, and now we commission it from an AI perspective, but we need to master it. And at times, going back to your generalist specific person's professional task, I think with all these AI hallucinations and things that happen at times, we need to know at least enough of the subject to be able to make an informed judgment, right? So, or at least know the basics, because otherwise, if we just listen to the machine at this stage and it can make mistakes, it could have big impacts. So I'm always on this view of we should know it and use the machine to enhance.
Yeah.
Rather than the machine knows more than we.
Yeah, we've definitely seen plenty of examples of hallucinations, and totally agree with this idea of AI being a co-pilot but not being the pilot. I think we've chatted a lot about with other folks on the show about that.
This episode is also brought to you by our friends at Sensis. Sensis is a data activation platform loved by marketing teams at Sonos, Canvas, Crocs, Notion, and more. As a customer, I've experienced the magic of Sensis firsthand. Their no-code audience hub and reverse ETL enable me to use our cloud data warehouse to power growth and create highly personalized customer journeys in all of my marketing platforms like Iterable and Google Ads. If you like the Humans of Martech podcast graphics and you want your very own image, we're doing a monthly raffle for a personalized t-shirt designed by us. Enter to win at getsensis.com/humans.
I want to stick to this idea of Copilot. You actually posted about Microsoft's Super Bowl Copilot ad, and I found it interesting because they're almost trying to position Copilot like an everyday AI companion. That's like they're trying to democratize AI tech, but most of us know it's funny that like they're pretty much a ripoff of ChatGPT. Like Copilot is literally built on top of GPT-4. But the ad essentially shows like AI-equipped teenagers who can now accomplish any creative task, like a technical task, like storyboarding a movie or like writing code for a 3D open world game. And there's like so much promise and excitement in the ad. And it's like, well produced and everything, but the problem I have with the message that they are sending, Microsoft is sending, is it's like going against what you basically just talked about in your previous answer. They aren't saying, learn this new skill and use AI as a tool and as an assistant to help you along your learning journey. Instead, they're basically saying, learning is really hard, so use our AI tool to do things for you instead. I'm curious what your thoughts were on the ad.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one, and going with your point as well. I actually find it funny enough at times that people would actually do not know that Copilot from Microsoft is built on ChatGPT, right? But this is a very interesting take you have. I actually didn't have that take, but I understand clearly how that message could come across this way, and it reminds me of maybe not too dissimilar Windows XP Microsoft back in the days, I think it was 2025, that was selling XP in maybe a similar type of fashion, right? I see the ad, I like the ad because it really taps onto emotions, right? The needs, the desire to succeed, which are very common nowadays with our generation, on the younger generation, right? This fast route to success, it's very glamorized, and I think the ad touch based on this. And the way I think what Microsoft is really showing this multimodal that you can do things, I think it's a very good way, at least a proposition. And I really just, I focused on the, let's say, on the share of voice and the amount of investment that Microsoft is doing to shout that we are here and now you can use this. But what I think about this message, if I have to interpret the way that you just said it, I think that this could come with some caveats, right? And I think the users themselves would test it, and then they maybe will come into maybe a not so fruitful journey, Matt, because if you go and just use the tools without having any basics, the results actually will not be those successful results that you expect. So I think the test, the real proof is when you eat the pudding, right? And then maybe if that's the promise you're trying to do, it's not going to go down so well. So that was a different take. I actually saw it, like, as I said to you personally, I was focused more on the showcase, the advertisement, the placement at this, because I haven't seen the company shouting so loud or investing so much. I think it's a couple of millions to invest on a few seconds at Super Bowl, right? And for you to shout, Chen AI is here doing that, I think it was a very good enough proposition. I felt it make a massive stamp in the market. So if we think about the Macintosh 1984 commercial that says, this is 1984, it's not going to be like 1984. So it reminded me that, okay, this is 2024. It's not going to be like 2024. So this is like a game changer. This technology is here, right? And we need to figure out how to best use it, either we like it or not. And I felt that's why I felt the ad was important. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. And actually just linking one more point, actually, that just came to mind, linking to the way that we work, as a lot of companies use on Microsoft, and the accessibility of having these tools at the hand of people just using Windows every day, it's massive, right? And the impacts it will have in our workspace, in the way that we restructure our organizations, and it will work. Wow. It's still not very measured, but I feel there is a massive restructure. I have my own opinions, but I'll save that one for later. But yeah.
You know, I think you touched on some really interesting points there. And one of the kind of sub themes that we've had with MarTech leaders who we've had conversations with us on this podcast is around the adoption of these tools. Like, if you're on LinkedIn or anywhere, like, it's really easy to find lots of cool ideas for prompts or social media posts to use AI. And I think that at a certain scale, it's kind of cool to play with. But then, you know, at least in my own consulting practice, I've seen that applying these and scaling the AI practices up, it takes a, it's an art form. It's another skill set on its own. So I'm curious in terms of your opinion, how do you recommend teams approach like the AI adoption use cases? How do we go from kind of what Phil was saying earlier, like, hey, you can do anything with AI, like welcome to the promised land. But in reality, there's use cases, practical applications, ways that this tool is going to either save time or grow revenue. So talk to us a little bit about the use cases, how you would approach this.
Yeah, so I always like this thought, let's say from a perspective of what in terms of AI adoption in a company, right? Depending on the size of the company. But this framework that I have should apply to every type of company. First is really having an assessment or an audit of the maturity of the capabilities the company has. Let's say the good old-fashioned AI everybody has been using in terms of machine learning, predictive models that we've been using for many years now, and then focusing also on the new generative AI as well perspectives. So understanding that capability, the understanding of the entire team or the entire company, who's using it, for what purposes, personally, professionally, or mix of both, because there are some companies who actually have banned the use of those tools, right? Generative AI, because of a lot of data compliance things, which we understand have been tackled, right? So this is first, understanding the capabilities, how people understand it. Then I would say if we see there is a gap, let's start upskilling the knowledge, right? Because it's not about just utilizing the tools itself. They need to have a purpose, like with any MarTech, right? It's an enabler to achieve X, Y, Z, revenue, productivity, reduce costs here, right? And create a better customer satisfaction or deliver personalization or content at scale. So once we understand that all that, then we need to be very clear on what is the business goal, what are the challenges? And then think about from this technology, not thinking about who's providing the technology, Microsoft, OpenAI, or whoever it might be. Just think about what models that could be applied to resolve certain of these issues and really figure out and plan out what are the desired outcomes for it they could measure. Really, but start with very quick and simple wins. For example, text to text, right? Copywriting things, text to image in terms of ideation, very simple things that are available to everyone now, free of charge. And then once those small use cases can be seen that are working, it gives a signal that in terms of maturity and adoption, people are ready to use that technology and not afraid of that technology per se. And then build up on those use cases and those winnings, then you can bring more complex use cases. But what I feel it's important, based on my experience so far, is that going back to say that there's going to be new roles in the org structure, is creating a center of excellence for AI that really is responsible for three main things, right? One is inspiring the use of it, understanding that it will not replace you if you use it properly, but people who are using it might replace people who are not, right? Then it's reskilling or upskilling and being sure that whatever we are doing, it delivers an outcome that is connected to the company and the business outcome, because otherwise we are just trying tech for the novelty of it, which shouldn't be the case.
I think this technology is fascinating. Like the one thing that I want to pull a little bit of a thread on is this idea of, you know, the pace of change. You mentioned this earlier, like in MarTech, humans don't love change. We're constantly kind of watching for change, but like AI comes with this, I'm going to say it, this massive hype cycle, right? Like people are worried and afraid, probably legitimately, that AI is going to replace their job or may already be replacing jobs. But at the same time, we're still like kind of having this mismatch between having lots of practical applications, like you mentioned some roles earlier, like having like a director of AI on your marketing staff or somebody who's really like having spearheading this AI strategy in house. So one thing I've seen is a little bit of pushback, like in some of my social circles. I've seen it a couple posts recently where people are like, I don't know, this is almost rejection, being force-fed AI is like, hey, I don't want to do AI. Like, I liked it the way it was before. I was comfy in bed. And there's a part of me that thinks like, wow, you're going to be really far behind. And then there's another part of me that just takes a step back and is like, are we just a bunch of early adopters? Are we hyping up something? Are we contributing to the problem? And I say this as a podcast co-host. Now I'm reflecting on myself a little bit. Listeners beware. But like when I go out into the real world, you know, and I talk to like my personal trainer and stuff, I'm like, what do you think of ChatGPT? He's like, John, what the heck are you talking about? So I'm curious about like, where are we in this cycle? Like, are we the very tippy point, you know, the sharp point of the spear of the early adopters? Or is this moving faster? Is this moving as fast as some of us think it is in terms of replacing jobs? And that if you're not an early adopter, you're going to be a late adopter.
This is a very interesting question. Now, I definitely think sometimes we are being forced to take this technology because of such a hype, right? There's a massive hype. There is this fear. There is this fear, and this fear comes from the unknown of not understanding the technology or not understanding how to apply the use cases, right? And where to start. And this idea that jobs are going to be disrupted, it really creates, I can say, maybe not a positive emotional spec when I know that now I'm a novelist and I can get the machine to write the novel very fast or cold. It becomes a bit of a threat in that sense. And then some people want to adopt it because most of the companies now want to, companies want to really drive all revenue companies that are for profit, right? Not for profit, want to optimize, want to find the best way really to drive revenue. And this is really why this technology is being so hyped, right? From a capitalism mm-hmm. perspective, it drives a lot of dollars. It can change things. And at times we do not think about the human impact, right? So I actually have two views on this. I think, yes, we are early adopters if we really scale and think about the whole world, like we really just go 300 feet high and look down. We are early adopters of this technology. This technology is actually available, democratized freely for all of us to use as long as we have access to the internet, right? And I feel that we should, as marketeers, take advantage of it to use it. Mm-hmm. Although, I have a second view is if we fast forward 20 years from now, we know that there's a fast speed of change in technology. There will be a case, I envision, there will be somewhere somehow who say, I do not want to use those type of technologies to write, to code, to do whatever in my type of business. And I want to be as human specific, human centric. So that would be maybe a revolution against the machine, the non-AI, that we could foresee in many years, right? So, but what I really want to say is that this is really something that we need to master. We need to get tuned in, even if we are not using or want to use it, we need to keep very close eyes to what this technology is doing. Because when I saw, for example, the announcements of Sora from OpenAI, I first just went and tried to find out how can I be part of the beta. Unfortunately, I couldn't. Imagine things like this. It's game changing, but it will not 100% replace humans. There'll be a change of roles, like when the typewriter came in. And now we have the computers. These people don't use to type. Not all of us are typewriters, right? Because all of us type. So this is how I tend to see that change of technology or adoption. But yes, I feel that we have been forced in some way somehow, either by being curious, going back to curiosity. And I think in our realm, we want to be curious and understand everything that's happening and how can we apply to our world. So I think we are actually also the cause of this, right? Because we are not saying, no, we actually say, I want more, yes. So,
Yeah, no, I like the double perspective there and kind of balancing yourself out on how you're seeing this. But yeah, my perspective is I think that I don't know if there's like a hype problem per se. Like in any new tech changes, there's going to be people that are going to be adopters early on and big fans of it and proponents of it. And we're seeing way too much noise already for that. Like all these like AI tool newsletters and like, if you're not using AI, you're being left behind type like hype cycle folks, right? But there's also, like John said, like a lot of folks that are just like, I am not anti-AI, but like everyone is worried about it replacing jobs and look at this crappy output based on like this thing that I was trying to get it to do. But on the topic of it, like replacing jobs, like it's funny, like John and I had a deep episode on this last summer where we were like talking about what are some of the roles in marketing that are potentially better suited to be future-proofed for like Gen AI specifically. And we had like product marketing in mind, we had like community marketing roles, and we were talking about like future roles and stuff like that. But obviously like content is the one that like we keep coming back to, and like it's the easiest answer of like, how can you leverage GPT internally? Hey, like you can just write a bunch of content for it. But I think that it's like, it's overplayed a little bit, but marketers that I trust, like I was listening to another podcast this morning, and he was saying essentially, like if he had to go back and like start a company from scratch today, and he was focusing on building like an inbound presence, like you would still do the same like keyword approach where he would pick like the main keywords for his product. But like back in the day, like 5-10 years ago, you would hire a bunch of writers once you start ranking for some of these key terms. And like you just like scale that as you like scale traffic. But today there's potentially way more efficiencies in doing that. And instead of hiring a bunch of content writers, you hire a few editors that are editing ChatGPT content and maybe more like informational, like top of funnel content. But yeah, it's an interesting time to be in marketing for sure. And yeah, I know that like you talked a bit about this idea of earlier on in the show that like MarTech folks are poised to be these like AI strategist roles internally, and they might actually be well suited to lead this AI adoption in MarTech. But I'm curious your take on this, like, why do you think MarTech folks or marketing operation folks are best suited internally to be the stewards of Gen AI and new AI tools?
Yes, my view on this is really from a perspective that, right, as professionals within marketing ops and MarTech, we really understand a couple of things that I think it's very important to drive that technology. Once we understand technology itself, how to implement already successfully working with the business sides and the technical sides. So really, I think within marketing, actually really good in MarTech to navigate the business marketing side and also the technology, right? So we kind of the hot spot, the nice spot in it. So that already puts in a good position to do that. So, and we always have the idea of the being customer centric to drive best experiences whilst driving revenue. And I think this is what this AI technology has been doing, and now Gen AI is also doing. So I would say that it's already a perfect fit. A lot of, sometimes we see conversations online or articles being positioned that AI is a very technical perspective. Yes, it's technical. We need to understand a lot of the algorithms, a lot of the models inside, the technicalities and the maths to do it. So, but from a business perspective on how to run it and drive value, we do not need to really be, I don't need to be a data scientist to run it. So we need to really look at those tools. from a business operation process on how we can use the applications from Pro. And I think that's why I would say the MarTech guys, the marketing ops are best suited for that, because that's already what we are doing. Of course, we need to partner with everyone in the company. For a process like this, or a company to adopt successfully, every single person in the company, every single function needs to be part of that transformation. Otherwise, it's really difficult, because we're talking about, I think the what you've just mentioned is the content velocity or the content supply chain is going to be impacted, right? Because we want more content. The customers want more content. It needs to be personalized. It needs to be in real time at scale. So AI comes and feeds that gap, right? Writing the copy, designing new things, automation, personalization, one-to-one, recommendation, next best offer. So all of these things we can combine it and we're like, okay, this is a dream, a 360 view, but it still needs that human behind to look at this thing. But once we take these beyond that realm of marketing side, and we're talking about employee engagement, the hours spent during X, Y, Z, on the HR process, on the hiring process. So really be an AI first type of company, like before where we used to be digital first companies. The whole perspective is that this will actually change everything. For example, you are working, you have your meetings, you have your notes, and you could have your AI saying to you, like a co-pilot can say, you had a lot of meetings today. You got to stop, you got to take your time. How do you cater for those type of co-pilot assistants that's hoping more on your workplace, on the, I like to call it the life-work balance instead of the work-life balance, right? Because for me, life comes first. And you mix it all with this, right? So I think having a clear vision and strategy alignment with all the units, this is what is going to create a really disruptive movement and application of AI. Otherwise, it will be kind of a, how can I call it? I don't want to call it a one-trick pony, because it's not, because we've got multimodals, different things, but it needs to be really integrated into DNA. And it's not about the tool itself, right? I think there's a shift in mindset, of growth mindset, utilizing it for the right value. There's no point to be forced to do something. They really don't understand your mind, doesn't it? It's like agility. We're talking about agile a lot. And you're going to follow the sprint, and you're going to follow all the ceremonies. But it's a mindset. It's not a structure per se. You have got to have this mindset. Right? You now have this mindset of improvement. You have the mindset of curiosity. So it's a bit of a longer answer, but I think this is really will help who is leading our tech. And I think we, as I think most of our listeners, your listeners today, we are the right place to meet that.
So I want to throw a little bit of a curveball, and I know we're running up to the end of the episode in terms of time, but like in terms of who leads the adoption of AI and MarTech and in marketing, like one of the thoughts that has been kind of sneaking into my head, and we've talked to a lot of marketing operations and MarTech leaders, and we've talked a lot about them being the stewards of AI and so on, but if I'm applying it to, and I work with smaller companies as a consultant, and I'm a solo consultant myself, like one of the things that keeps coming up in my head is like the tendency of marketing operations and MarTech is to put process in place, is to strategize, to understand the lay of the land, to plan. But my own experience with AI and Gen AI has been very grassroots. Like, I don't know what I know until I'm doing it. Like there is a free form, radical, creative expression that happens. And I'm finding that at least in the organizations that I work with, where there's like this almost top down approach to AI, it becomes harder to come up with the use cases versus like there's almost a necessity to experiment and to try things that you haven't done before. And I just was one really quick example myself. Like I'm terrible at image design. Like I've never done any graphic design in my life. And since we've done this episode with Phil last year on Midjourney, I have generated thousands of images. I'm now using AI to do video generation, and I'm like untapping a creative part of my brain that I'd never do. And it's having huge benefits for me. So I'm just curious, like, how do we as MarTech leaders, because I think you're right, by the way, that like it is a much more organized approach is needed, particularly for larger organizations. But there's a spirit of innovation that like free radical mad scientists like myself will, I think they need to be enabled to play in the labs a little bit. So just curious your perspective there.
I fully agree. And actually, by the way, I really enjoy the brand identity of humans of MarTech, right? I think now nice. Came up with that. I call the brand identity. It's super good. So well done.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
And I feel this is exactly what AI should be doing. Amplifying our skills, helping us develop our human creativity, right? Because it's taking away some of the mundane tasks so we can focus on some things we can really drive value.
Yeah.
With that technology, I fully agree with you in a sense of this does not need to be top down, right? This can be bottom up. And I think really to drive change, it needs to be bottom up. People will come with multiple use cases, as small as they might be. We need to try it. We need to see what's the aspect. It might not actually be 100% about marketing. It could be about employee satisfaction. It could be about even improving when the next meal is going to be delivered, the drinks to be drink, keeping people healthy, right? But it will give the overall chance for people in the company to be part of this innovation. Imagine you work, I'm trying to find a function that we might not find that is not too creative, because I actually think everything is very creative. Okay, let me just try to find out something.
Accounting or finance? Accounting or finance?
Actually, I find it's quite creative, but let's say accounting, right? You've got these numbers. And maybe someone who's come up with something really, really good and say, okay, when we're doing our contracting and managing things and these types of vendor, we need to understand behaviors or likelihood or when or what's the best factors we can do to fast speed closing a contract, right? From a contractual perspective. And maybe we might not even think about this, but this could be something that is going to be so impactful for that department. Mm. I mean, if we just focus on specific use cases to drive just revenue, we will forget a lot of times that we forget that the best capital a company has is actually the human intellect, the human resources, that capital. So then that capital itself should be given that technology to play with, exercise those muscles, and come back with ideas in the one and the four. And I feel this will be the winning formula. And it needs to be grassroots. I fully agree with you, JT.
Yeah, great take there, Mauro. This has been a super fun conversation. Appreciate you letting us go over a little bit over time here. I know it's late for you. One last question for you. We asked this to all of our guests. You're a pandemic dad, a well-traveled director of MarTech, a panelist, a speaker. You're also a big dystopian sci-fi guy. We asked this to everyone because I'm curious, like your perspective on this. You already talked about life-work balance versus work-life balance. But how do you remain happy and successful in your career? And how do you find that balance between all the things you're working on while staying happy?
Now, that's really cool. A question really close to home, as I said, right? My view is life-work balance, not work-life balance. Few things is really making time for the family, making time for my family, my friends. I actually have maybe a small ritual life family. It's like listening to music very often, dancing with my little one, with my wife. So creating small moments of happiness that helps you break out that routine from the day-to-day basis. And something also that works exactly for me to let's say some of personal preferences, although I enjoy a lot of social outings, I also enjoy free time on my own, time to recharge. Even going on walks, reading, writing, It's something I find really refreshing that I can recharge on my own. And then really going back to the type of what we're talking about, curiosity, is really finding out new ideas that could be completely outside of my realm of knowledge. That just makes me, how can I say, disconnect. So this is really why I like sci-fi, dystopian reality, because it's like, it's not happening here. It's that I can see it and then I can come back. And that, that's really a good way. And at times thinking of life as a, even my gaming experience, and at times, if you think live and you try to see that you are a game producer, and we are our own character, we write our storyline, that could be quite fun, right? So, so this kind of helps out when you're facing those dreadful, dying situations that might not be so nice. You really need to understand it's part of the cycle. I'm in level one, then I'm going to have this level. I need to defeat that monster, and then after that, I move. Yeah, I move that. That's really quite fun, and this helps you to keep up a healthy, positive mental attitude. And I think we perform best when we are happy, and then that leads to success. And just being really, another thing is really being kind to people, really being nice, kind, candid. That helps for happiness and building good relationships, which will just propagate and drive success. And
love it. Love that answer, Mauro. Really appreciate you sharing that. Yeah, definitely see a lot of parallels in the sci-fi stuff. But yeah, I love your answer about thinking of our lives as a game a little bit, stepping back. And you know what? Maybe we are all in a simulation, so maybe it actually is all a game. We don't know. Thank you so much for your time, man. Really appreciate it. Yeah, thank you.
No, thank you both. It's definitely been a pleasure being here today. I really enjoyed it.
Hey folks, thanks for checking out the episode today. We're having a lot of fun this season and really appreciate you listening in. We've recently started dabbling in video and posting full episodes on YouTube. So if you're curious to see our radio faces, check out our brand new YouTube channel. And if you haven't done so already, the best way to support the show is to sign up for our weekly newsletter, where we notify you every Tuesday morning when a new episode drops. But the newsletter also includes our favorite takeaways from our conversation. So if you're in a hurry and you're not sure if you have time to listen to that episode, the newsletter will catch you up on the most important practical takeaways. And that's it for today. We've got some exciting announcements coming up next week, so stay tuned for that. But thank you again for listening. Really appreciate you.